Yeah, that's what we do. Set them up, knock them down, make that cherry glow. Whiskey and cigars, the gentleman's cologne.
Cheers, y'all.
That sounds like a party just about to begin, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this fine program, a radio program, podcast, and video extravaganza known internationally as the world famous Smokin' and Toastin'. Welcome to show number 376, and we are excited about this one. Our program's all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. Three things Ian is just completely unversed in.
No, nothing about this.
But we are so glad to have you with us for this 376th show of the program. Roberto Rivas Villar, our good friend and cocktail expert, joins us today on the show.
How are you guys doing?
But he's not talking cocktails today.
No cocktails today. How weird is that?
He's connected us with the folks from Peco Tierra. Is it Pecho?
Pecho Tierra.
Pecho Tierra. Okay. They are makers of a fine artisanal mezcal, and we're going to be joined by a representative, not just a representative, by the way, a co-founder of Pecho Tierra. Enrique Alfredo Cesar Gomez will be joining us on the show to talk about the spirit. As you can tell, and Roberto brought these in, obviously he's taken some liberties with the preparation.
He's done the quality testing.
Right. He's made sure that we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay when we drink this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I can say the same thing for the beverage of mystery, but we'll get to that in just a moment. Want to thank our special guest from last week, Lizzie Mays, who's now with Casa de Monte Cristo.
She was
1960,
awesome.
And she's so fun. I love having her on the show. I hate that her old place isn't open anymore, but I'm glad she's part of Casa, and that's it was really fun having her on.
Yeah, that was such a fun thing to run into her there.
Yeah, and she was, of course, just great on the show, as she always is. We'll be trying some interesting stuff today, some beers from the Florida Brewery. We'll be trying their Polar Pilsen.
I don't think I've tried anything from Florida Brewery.
I don't think we have had any on the show before, and this comes, it's kind of interesting because they're a Florida brewery, but they've got a polar bear on the bottle, and it's,
that's interesting.
But it's Polar Pilsen
because there's a Venezuelan beer and brewery called Cerveza Polar, and it's a polar bear.
It's a polar bear. Well, these guys may be fighting it out soon. And right? What'd you say there, Venezuela?
Yeah,
Venezuela. Are they any good?
It's a standard micro-produced beer.
Yeah. Okay. Right, fair enough. Well, from Pondaceta Brewing Company, these guys are out of Amarillo, Texas. I believe we'll be trying the first beer from those guys we've ever tried.
I don't think we've ever had a beer out of Amarillo.
This is going to be their Pale Aura. It's a hazy pale ale. So we'll be looking forward to trying something different from those guys. And then from Chicago, Illinois, and Revolution Brewing, we'll be trying.
I like the name already.
Maple Jacket.
Maple Jacket.
It's a barley wine ale in a can.
Baby.
So this is interesting because I think most barley wines that we try usually are in a bottle, often in a bomber. So
barley wine in a can. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and they even call it bottle conditioned. You know, typically it's a bottle conditioned.
Right, can conditioned here, right?
So we'll look forward to trying all of these beers. And, of course, for the spirit from Distillado de Maguey, their artisanal Pecho Tierra Mezcal from northern Mexico. We'll be trying that there.
That's
so
exciting.
So in order to be called a tequila, a spirit has to be from the tequila region of Mexico.
It can be produced in different places in Mexico.
Right.
One of them being the state of Jalisco.
Right.
Tamaulipas.
Most tequilas, I think, come from Jalisco, don't they?
A lot of them do. Yeah. Michoacan, you can produce some.
Right.
But
what other than the fact that it has a different flavor profile, what distinguishes a mezcal or another Mexican spirit from a tequila?
So tequila is basically the denomination of origin, right? We have agave distillate. Mezcal is another denomination of origin, which has to be made also in certain states. Monterey, well, Nuevo León, the state where I'm from, my hometown, it's not one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So even though in terms of colloquial things, mm-hmm. mezcal is any distillate made from agave.
Okay.
In terms of the not a denomination of origin.
Right.
But technically in the bottle, because of laws, you cannot slap mezcal in this bottle. Right. Because it's not mezcal.
I see. You just can't name it that.
It's right. And it's distilled in a pretty different way. This there's a very peculiar way that they do this, and it's beautiful. It tastes like not any other agave distillate you've ever had before.
So should we expect the kind of smokier taste of mezcal?
No, you're going to expect something way crazier than
that. Okay, cool. Well, looking forward to it. This is going to be an adventure. And is this something we can get here in the States?
It's making
readily?
Its way. Right now, there's a distribution company called Las Chingonas that distributes it.
What's your language?
that's
Spanish for the Chingonas.
Gotcha.
The baddies.
The baddies. Okay, fair enough.
But that crazy enough, that's the name of the company. That's how they call themselves. And they sell it in New York City right now. And they're working, and we're seeing how can we bring it to Texas very soon.
Cool. Well,
we got a couple bottles right here in Texas. We're going to try these.
Yeah, we're very excited about it. So we'll get onto that in a few minutes. But first, we have to be excited about trying something that we do as sort of a blind taste test here on the program. We like to do it in the first segment. And it's a little something we call...
My thing.
We don't call it my thing. We call it... So the beverage of mystery, formerly known as the mystery beverage, this is where one of us will bring in some kind of a drink, some kind of a beverage, and pour it for the others. We kind of taste it sight unseen, and only the person who brought, only the person what brung it knows what it is until we'll do the reveal at the end. And so it's a sort of a good way to get some really unbiased thoughts and stuff about what it is. And it could be a spirit, it could be a beer, it could be a seltzer, it could be a cider, it could be a hard
this seems like tea. It could be a mix of all of those things.
It looks like in the glass that you're not super well hydrated.
It smells like
vanilla.
Yeah,
so many things.
Vanilla right away.
Yeah, big time vanilla.
What are you getting any fruit there?
Coconut?
It's hard to nail.
Maybe. Okay, let's take a sip.
I get a little bit of hand lotion.
You definitely don't want a hand lotion note in your beverage.
Well,
I want to say it goes in the tropical, slightly on the tropical side, like the pineapple and coconut.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very faint, though.
I get the pineapple, especially on the aftertaste. The little pineapple. but it almost tastes more like the condensed pineapple, not like fresh pineapple, like the condensed pineapple that you get,
Like the candies.
Even that. I was thinking about the stuff you take out of the tube in the freezer and crush it up and put some water in it. Yeah.
The concentrate.
Yeah.
I get something else that I don't want to say because I actually know what it is, because I brought the beverage of mystery in today.
It has an overall
taste.
And if
I say it, I'm going to give it away. So I'm going to wait another moment and let you guys tell me what you're getting. But I do taste it, and I think maybe when the reveal happens, you will recognize it as well.
What I find interesting is that you smell the vanilla, but then you don't taste the vanilla.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can't, but there's an overall taste that I can't identify on it. I don't know what it is.
The beverage of mystery can.
It's not unpleasant to drink. It's a little sweeter. The first sip of it was a little polarizing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a citrus fruit?
No. Mm. The beverage of mystery can, when it comes in a can, and I bring it in, will usually reside in my pocket once I've poured it. And then I will ceremoniously pull it out of my pocket and reveal from Meridian Hive, it is their apple pie. They describe it as a lightly carbonated wine cocktail with apple, cinnamon, and vanilla. So tell me if you don't get apple pie.
But I don't know that I get apple.
I get apple pie when you say it. I get the cinnamon. That's what it was. It was the overall trying to be a taste. It's trying to be the apple pie. That's what it is that I'm tasting something.
Interestingly enough, not a cider, not a seltzer. It's a lightly carbonated wine cocktail.
I like it.
I do too, actually. I think it's pretty tasty.
Yeah.
You know, once you get past the hand lotion nose on it.
Right.
It's not bad to drink.
I don't get any of that in the flavor.
I can see the apple once you say it, but I wouldn't have picked up on that.
I think
entirely.
You're tasting expecting a, or I think what you're saying or you're confusing with hand lotion is also the pie crust. I think it's a pie mm-hmm. crust flavor mm-hmm. that they tried to go with to add to that apple pie
you know,
flavor.
You know what's throwing me off is the honey side of this. Mm-hmm. Since we only right. use the finest honey and real fruits in all of our
and
products, we
partner the honey
with them. You really do.
So it's kind of like a meat probably?
To,
maybe, yeah.
To guarantee our honey quality, consistency, and be this is Meridian Hive's not far from here, right? It, oh, Austin, yeah, yeah.
It could be a mead if any of us. Yeah.
I've had some
as a
of
Viking.
Their. I've had some of their meads before. I actually yeah. like their meads. They make one that's like a dark cherry mead that's quite good.
I may bring in a mead for a beverage eventually, but you guys will know because I'll be dressed as a Viking. I'll give it away.
I think the honey was the thing throwing me off. Yeah. Like I said, I get apple when you say it.
Most
but,
most meads have a honeyed
It's not
flavor
unpleasant to,
them. To
drink at all.
Yeah, no, I actually kind of like it. Yeah, yeah.
It's so. Refreshing, too.
Yeah. Reminds me of something you might get at a bar that has just a beer and wine license, so they yeah. make their cocktails with, you know, wine-based.
Wine-based kind
of,
yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that a little bit. Ian, we got 3 minutes left in this segment. Is that enough for you to tell me about your
I
cigar?
I can knock it out.
Or do you need more time?
Challenge
you need more time?
Accepted.
All right, go for it, buddy.
Today I chose the Foundation Ascom. Mm. This I picked up the Toro size 6x52. The wrapper is Sumatra Ecuador wrapper, Connecticut broadleaf binder, and Esteli and Jalapa Nicaraguan filler. The appearance on this medium brown oily wrapper, smooth with some veins, pigtail cap, single band. Pre-light sniff on this sweet coffee and earth at the foot, chocolate and barnyard. Coming along on there as well. The pre-light draw on this, I used a clip. I got some tangy leather on the lips. I really loved like the flavor that it left on the lips. It was really
tangy
really nice
leather. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was this really bright kind of leathery kind of note. And I also got some dark fruit and coffee on the pre-light draw. The initial light on this, I got the Nicaraguan pepper breeze with chocolate, raisin, and cedar. Retrohale is sweet and spicy with bitter chocolate. The first third on this, baking chocolate, brownie batter, coffee, oak, raisin, all up front, underlying wow. cedar and leather going on. Retrohale is baking chocolate with a touch of spice, flaky ash, good burn. Second third of this starts off with chocolatey chocolate with chocolate sauce. And big silky smoke.
Was it chocolatey?
It was very chocolatey. Yeah. This is, I mean, if you like a chocolatey like cigar,
I do.
Not infused, but this thing was like a chocolate.
I do. That's
bomb.
Why I love like the Bella Artez so much. Is yeah. because it's such a chocolate.
Yeah.
Bomb.
This yeah. is this, and this is on another level because the notes I was getting were like brownie batter and things like those yeah. dark chocolate yeah. and raisin. Ooh. I got a lot of raisin yeah. in this thing.
Yum.
The last third of this, I had an uneven burn, flaky ash. I had an uneven burn in the middle of it. I tended it right before the last third of this. It evened out very nicely. A bit more coffee, oak, and spice. Dry oaky notes linger on the finish. Retrohale is sweet brownie batter and oak with a hint of spice. Flaky ash, good burn. Price to quality, I give it a solid 5. As much as I love this cigar, it's $16.50.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's a very
but still,
expensive.
If it hits a 5, that means it
you get exactly what you pay for. Yeah, yeah you're not punching above your price limit there. But man,
which is
was
tough to do.
What a good cigar,
bucks,
and I
yeah.
would highly recommend it if you want like a nice close to special occasion cigar that is an absolute chocolate bomb. I don't think you could find
a good spirit that
wouldn't just pair up with very nicely.
I'm thinking about that with a rum.
Oh. Yes, ooh. Yeah. I was thinking about that, like just like. Maybe a rum or a good
but a little bit higher proof so you can get that, you know, more
yeah.
chocolate, more
yeah, and this was good solid medium, maybe on the higher side of medium, so it would stand up all pretty right. well too.
All right, well, I'll tell you about my cigar when we come back, plus we have guests joining us. The man with four names, Enrique Alfredo Cesar Gomez, the co-founder of Petro Tierra, will be joining us coming up, and we'll sample some of this fine Mexican spirit that Roberto has promised is gonna be different
it's gonna
than
blow
anything.
Your mind.
Okay, looking forward to it. It's Smoking and Toasting. And welcome back, my friends. This is Smoking and Toasting. Our show is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. We are glad you're here today. By the way, I didn't mention it in the first segment, but we will, of course, be doing Drinking News today. Drinking News is the most popular segment on this program, and it's the part of the show where we bring you a story that is actually true. It's been reported in the media somewhere. It's not a parody like The Onion. It's a story that is often, but not always, about drinking. But it is always best enjoyed if you've been drinking. And today's Drinking News teaser headline is... If it ain't Scottish, it's crap. We'll get to that. We'll get to that coming up. I want to tell you about the cigar I had this week that I wanted to share with you. I smoked the Tatuaje Fausto Robusto Extra. Ooh. And I did not know until after I had purchased it that the Tatuaje Fausto Robusto Extra was an extremely full-bodied cigar. Extremely being the key word here. I didn't know that it was spun off from a custom blend that Pete Johnson of Tatuaje made for a specific retailer in Hawaii that was so strong it caused a number of people to throw up after smoking it. And I didn't know that when the Fausto was released in 2011 that it borrowed a line for its advertising from one of my favorite movies of all time. The movie, This is Spinal Tap, the line from the Tatuaje Fausto ad, these go to 11.
These go to 11.
Yeah. And you can see this the ad up here. Adam will put that up in the video version of the show. It's absolutely not false advertising, and I was about to find out. The Fausto uses a core blend of Nicaraguan tobacco for the filler and binder that are wrapped in an Ecuadorian-grown Habano Maduro wrapper leaf, and it's a nice-looking cigar, dark, oily wrapper leaf, and to be honest, it did not look all that menacing. It really didn't. I mean,
it was such a nice boy next
door. I've smoked big, full-bodied cigars before, and they usually have something about their appearance that gives them away a little bit, like the blackened M81, the Metallica cigar. Like,
you look at it, it's called a chisel.
Absolutely. Or the Andalusian Bull. You kind of know what you're getting into.
Or Man of War.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. You kind of know what you're getting into with those babies. But for all I knew, when I was doing a little pre-light sniffing, getting earth and chocolate, I might be in for a nice mellow Maduro, medium-bodied, leisurely smoke. Well, the second I lit it up, I knew it was coming for me. The Nicaraguan pepper blast was as intense as any in recent memory. And I seriously wondered if it was going to stay at that strength for the whole smoke. Answer is no, but not by much. The Fausto settled down slightly, but the first third was still powered by pepper. And I also got a coffee note, like coffee and cream with cream and sugar and an undercurrent of cocoa. About an inch or so in, the pepper tapered off just slightly and allowed me to focus a little more on the chocolate and coffee and now a hint of leather. But when I say a little bit, it's kind of like college basketball star Caitlin Clark scoring 30 points in the championship game. It's not the 41 she scored in the regional game the week before, but it's still a pretty intense beatdown.
Right.
I'm just saying. Which is not to say that the Tatuaje Fausto beat me down. I hung in there like a trooper, but holy crap, this was a strong cigar. Second, third, things started to get really interesting.
Did it give you the hiccups?
Yeah. Espresso, dark coffee, earth. And sorry, I hit a button and lost my place. More leather. Burn was not perfect, but it wasn't problematic. I did touch it up once. The final third, the pepper, which was now hitting me more like white pepper, ramped up a little bit, if you can believe that, and left a continuous tingling on the palate. Mm. Like it didn't go away when you stopped smoking the cigar. Lots of intense flavor notes accompanied it, though, most of which I've already mentioned. And at that point, I decided to just sit back and let the Fausto take me for a ride the rest of the way. I stopped trying to identify notes, and I just enjoyed the journey and the sheer power of this reasonably small cigar. It reminded me of getting a really good hard massage. It's a pretty intense experience, but it leaves you much happier for having had it. Nice. I had also had this cigar for a while, and it had spent some considerable time in the humidor, which I think probably helped the other flavors come through in spite of the ongoing pepper onslaught. Tatuaje Fausto Robusto Extra is an $8 to $9 cigar, which makes it a pretty good buy if you're looking for something to knock you on your butt. That's less than any of the other extremely full-bodied smokes I mentioned earlier. Even the Toro can be found for about $9. So on the price-to-quality scale, I'll give this bad boy a solid 6.
Nice.
But be warned, this is not only a Fisher Price, this is not only not a Fisher Price, my first cigar. It's probably not even a my second cigar or my 100th cigar. But if you're looking for a smoke that packs a punch for the price, it may be pretty hard to beat. This is Smoking and Toasting, and we'll be right back to talk Mexican spirits. Welcome back. It's Smoking and Toasting. Our show is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. Welcome to show number 376, where we venture into a new to us Mexican spirit that Roberto, our cocktail expert here on the show, has proclaimed is going to blow our minds.
It so will.
I'm very excited about this. And welcome to the program, the co-founder of Pecho Tierra. It is Enrique Alfredo Cesar Gomez. Do you mind if we just call you E?
It doesn't matter. I'm okay.
Okay. So, Enrique, welcome to the show. First of all, where are you speaking to us from?
From Mexico City.
Mexico City. Okay. Well, welcome to the show, and we are thrilled to have you on. And so I guess the first question is, what got you into the spirits business and got you to found, because you're a co-founder of the company, so you've been with this from the beginning. What got you interested in doing this? Was it a love of spirits you had already, or?
No, I didn't. I came back to Mexico City from a trip that I did to Europe. And then I decided to do like a solo trip to Oaxaca. And then that's how I got into the spirits. You know, like you go to Oaxaca, do this tour of mezcales. And of course, I ended up all drunk. And after that, I went back to Monterrey with my friends. And I told them about my experience. And then another one of my friends, which is one of the other co-founders, is Alan Schubert. He did the same trip. But when he came back to Monterrey, for him, it was like I don't know how to call it, but he was most interested into this. So he started like studying more about the history of the mezcal in Mexico. He did a certification as a culture of the mezcal in Oaxaca. And then when he finished this certification, he said, like, hey, we should do like a tasting project. And then after that, we started doing some tastings in Monterrey just to share with the people over there that we have like this big culture of mezcals in Mexico. And moving forward, we are starting thinking, let's do a project, right? Let's start investigating what's going on in Monterrey or in Nuevo León with the mezcal. So we found some very curious data and producers, and that's where we decided to create like we have found a very good producer, a very good product that we should share with the rest of the people in Nuevo León and with the rest of the world, and that's how it started Pecho Tierra like 5 years ago.
Now, Mexican spirits, obviously people are familiar with tequila, and more people are knowing and learning and enjoying mezcal. Mm-hmm. Sotol is somewhat known. Where does your spirit fit in? Is this a mezcal? Is it not a mezcal? How do we classify it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, legally, I can't call it mezcal. Okay. But before the DO, the denomination of origin that was created in the 1904, most of the states in Mexico called their products as mezcal, okay? So in this particular case, I have found data that Nuevo León used to have a big industry of mezcal. The latest or the oldest register that I found is from back to 1789. That talks about provision of vino mezcal in Lampazo de Naranjo, which is at the north of the state of Nuevo León. And if we go back to that time in the history, people over there just called to their product vino mezcal, right?
Okay, right
before
right.
the deal. So indeed, it's a mezcal. I cannot call it
legally
mezcal,
it's not it a mezcal, but it is
yeah
it is what you would call yeah. like going back to the old days yeah. it would have been called a mezcal.
And so, I was telling them earlier, like, in technically, in if we go back to the Native American roots, mezcal is any distillate made from agave. That's right.
So and this is right. made from 100% agave, is that right? Okay, so
that's right.
So Roberto, how did you guys get connected? Because obviously you know more about this spirit than we do.
So it's actually a pretty cool, beautiful story, because I went to an event where my friend Jesus, who is an amazing bartender in Austin, at a bar called Here Nor There, they are doing crazy things that nobody does here in Texas probably. And they were going to the Tales of the Cocktail with these girls that they have they do a lot of stuff in the agave business, and they have bars in Costa Rica and I think she has some stuff in Mexico too, right? And Lady Tequila.
Yeah.
So I knew they were coming, and well, I was like, well, I'm gonna go see Jesus, my friend. Perfect opportunity. They came to Julep, and before they went to that, they stopped by Nuevo León to try this beautiful spirit, and they showed it to me, and they were like, oh yeah, this is made in Nuevo León, and we're like, oh, that's where I'm from. I need to try this, and so I tried it, and not because I'm from there, but I really fell in love with it, and I started. Where can I get this? And then I think some time ago I made some contact with you when this first happened. And finally friends were able to go down there, and one friend brought me a bottle, the other friend brought me another bottle, and I started making my videos as I usually do. Mm-hmm. And I tasted Will on it, and he was in love with it too. And well, now our friendship has grown to different levels, and now he's my homie.
So I realize we should probably get to the tasting because we're all kind of like waiting. But while we do, I wanted to ask you, Enrique, when I think mezcal, based on what I have had, I think of a Mexican spirit that's got a smokier taste than what I expect from a spirit that would be called tequila. Is that what we're expecting here, or is this something altogether different?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. I mean, for sure there is that smoky probably note. But not as strong in the other mezcal.
I'm not getting it on the nose.
No. And this is to clarify, this is going to be made from the variety of cenizo agave.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Which is not the same as the state of Durango has. You know, like the agave is the scientist name of the plant, and maguey is the local name of the plant, right? So people in Laguna de Sanchez call it a cenizo or cenizo del campo, depending the altitude where they found it. But the main difference here with the rest of the destilados is that this product is fermented with pulque instead of water, right?
Yeah. And so what does that do differently?
The taste, the viscosity, the notes, you know, like the producer can't use water because Laguna de Sanchez is a very cold place, or kind of a cold place. So if they use water, the fermentation process will go like very, very slow. Yeah, so they use the pulque to accelerate the fermentation process. And it's the pulque can be from maguey cenizo or from maguey verde, or actually can be a blend of both. It's, it's whenever they found like pulque that comes from another community called La Cebolla, which is like 2-3 hours away from Laguna de Sanchez, they start cooking the pineapples of the agave and do the fermentation process. But the main characteristic of this product is the pulque fermentation.
This is so interesting. Like on the nose,
it is.
There's a vegetal, a slight vegetal note and a really earthy quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it doesn't smell like tequila, but you get that agave undertone underneath everything. That kind of similar, like undertone.
What's interesting to me is the on the nose. There's a sort of a green. I guess the vegetal you were talking about makes you almost think that if it's a tequila, it's a very young one. But then when you taste it, it's so like it's so deep. It's got so much
so many layers
to the flavors.
Blossoms.
It doesn't taste young at all.
It blossoms on the palate and turns into chocolate.
And the funkiness. I've always loved the funkiness of I'm pretty sure that's product of the pulque.
And there is some smoke, but it's not. With most mezcals I've had, even the ones I consider to be really good, the smoke was the predominant note.
And an American gimmick, typically. Too.
Yeah, with here, it's just a part of the notes that you're getting, and there's so much richness.
It's a little more evident on the retrohale, you know.
Correct.
When you
yes.
Breathe gently out your nose, you get a little bit of that smokiness, but it's not. It's certainly not a smoke bomb where. Like a lot of the mezcals that I've had as well.
And maybe for some of your audience that are not aware what pulque is, pulque is basically...
That was not.
Is before the... Well, now there's evidence, like we were talking before, Will and I, there's evidence of distillation in the Americas before the Spaniards came. But the Native Americans, what they did, they would cut a hole in the middle of the agave plant, and that sap would start coming out. And they would ferment that, and they would drink it as wine.
Wow.
And so, that's probably why it was called vino, even after being distilled, probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that's right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. This is a beautiful spirit. The warmth, the hug that you get, that warm hug that comes back, has a little bit of a brightness to the edge. I don't know how to describe it. It's a little bit brighter or sharper kind of heat to it, but not in an unpleasant way at all. It's very interesting.
If I could put it in total layman's terms, it's kind of like the cognac or the Armagnac of mezcal.
That's an interesting way to put it, because it's very sweet and then spicy. And
right. It has those that sort of liqueur sort of vibe to it when you are tasting it, but it's an underlied with that agave, with that smoky mezcal, with a little bit of that.
It kind of drinks like a brandy. That's what you're trying
to. Right. It seems very sophisticated, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
If you leave it sit on your tongue for just a minute before you swallow, the moment you swallow, you get this, and inhale, you get this beautiful chocolate and very oaky
Very oaky, yes.
Like an astringency almost that just leaves your mouth watering.
This is really delicious. It's right.
Pretty crazy, right?
It's got a wonderful, it's wonderful characteristics to
and
it.
The best part, to me, is crazy. Sorry that I interrupted you, Cruz. Can you believe that this is 48%?
If you don't 48%. Interrupt him, you'll never get words in.
This is true. Yes, that's how it works here on the show. I told Ian that we first started the program. I go, look, do not be shy, because if you don't interrupt me, you'll never speak. It'll be just a monologue.
I just don't feel like it drinks like a 48.6%.
No, it's pretty amazing. No.
And tell me about what, and I don't know, is this on the market yet? Can we get it in the U.S.? We can?
In New York, you can get it right now.
Okay.
The Forbidden... the distribution company.
Yeah.
The name that I cannot say on radio.
I understand.
The Baddies.
Yeah.
They distributed in New York City. And Enrique and I, we've been trying to see how can we do efforts to bring it here to Texas and California.
How's the response been in New York City? Have you been getting a good response from people? Have you gotten the name out there?
Yeah. So, I think it was like 8 cases with 6 bottles each case. And then, like, a couple of months later, they asked us for, I think they were, like, 50 cases, something like that. And now we are preparing a shipment of 100 cases.
Oh, so it's growing.
Go, like, in the next, yeah.
And
it's causing a very...
Are you in retail there in New York? Are you in bars only? Or where can people find it?
I think it's in retail, too, right, Enrique?
Yeah. There's a retail store called Liquor Box in New York where you can find us. But mostly it's in restaurants.
And what does a bottle like this sell for?
I'm not sure how. Do you know how?
I don't know how much in the United States, but here in Mexico, it depends the production lot. But roughly, it's like 1,400 pesos, the cheapest, to up to 1,800 pesos.
I would say about $60, maybe.
Will be probably.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
But I don't know how much in the U.S.
And are you widely available in Mexico?
Mostly in Monterrey. Mexico City, just in a few bars. And Guadalajara. And I think some places at Quintana Roo, which Tulum and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the production is not that big. And we had a hard time trying to introduce this product to other retail stores or bars, because, you know, to sell the product here in Mexico, you have to get this sticker, which is called a marbete. So it's very hard to get it. We get it like last year, I think. So yeah, we are on that process of going to the places and offer the product.
So you're at a very, very young stage of this whole brand.
So yeah, you started
this company
5 years ago, and then just a year ago you got to the point where you could go sell it. Is that correct?
Yeah, we started at the end of 2019, then COVID came in 2020.
Everybody.
We started the process of the brand. So we got the Marbetes like 1 year or 2 years ago, something like that. So yeah. I mean, even though we are pretty known in Nuevo León right now, and kind of in Mexico City too, but I haven't go directly to the bars to offer the product yet.
Love it. Well, we are pretty excited about this first one that we've tasted, and we look forward. Can you hang with us for another couple of segments? Is that cool, Enrique?
Sure. Yeah.
All right, so we got to take a break, and we'll be back. We want to try more of this, plus we have some beers to taste. Good. And this is wonderful. Yeah. What a treat to try this. And you're right.
So
not
different.
At all like I might have expected.
It's so
right.
Different.
Yeah, wonderful. We'll be right back at Smokin' and Toastin'. Thank you for listening. It's Smokin' and Toastin'. We're so glad to have you guys here for show number 376, which, by the way, I believe that puts us halfway to 500. So I'm pretty excited about our achievements there. So this next beer that we're about to try has already been the subject of some controversy here on the show, because I bought this beer in the little store that's downstairs in my building. Shout out to Phoenicia. You're awesome and wonderful. And you have a really lovely beer selection. I bought it down there and listed it on our show notes. It's from a brewery called the Florida Brewery, and it's their Polar Pilsen. They're from Auburndale, Florida. And Roberto says, oh, yeah, I know of a beer, a Polar, that's from Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I pulled the bottle out for us, he goes, that's the beer. And then apparently Enrique is also familiar with this beer from Venezuela. So I don't know whether... Well, this is originally a Venezuelan beer that they are now making in Florida as well, or vice versa. I do know that there is a pretty large Venezuelan population in Florida, so maybe mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's a correlation there. But I really don't know where this comes from. The bottle says it comes from Auburndale, Florida. Mm-hmm. Ian, have you?
I'm looking
been
it
able
up.
To do
I'm
any
looking
research?
Up online. It says. ABC Fine Wine and Spirits has a list that says brewery, Florida brewery, country, Venezuela.
Interesting. So this adds to the whole confusion.
The mysterious, yeah.
Unless my geography teacher was wrong. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
Do you think that it's just called the Florida Brewery, but it's in Venezuela, well, and they just named it Florida?
You know, or maybe it's like, you know,
are they big fans of Florida Evans?
In Tampa, there's an area called, or in Miami, where there's an area called Little Havana. Maybe this is Little Venezuela in Auburndale. I don't know.
Little Florida.
But interestingly enough, it's a pretty interesting pilsner on the nose. I don't know if you had a chance
Beer Advocate says it's, where is it? Oh, I just said it on the previous. Polar Pilsen is a European pale lager style brewed by Cerveceria Polar in Caracas, Venezuela.
Huh. So maybe it's from Little Caracas,
Venezuela. I don't know why I put extra.
This is really interesting because now we've added European to the mix here because it does kind of remind me of
so
a German.
So it's got
a
little
Bavarian
skunk
Pilsen.
On the nose.
Yeah, it has a little bit of that metallic taste.
It's got a little skunk on the nose, like a Heineken.
It's got flavor, though. I got to give it that. It's got flavor.
Yeah. Has some flavor, yeah.
It's not bad. It doesn't drink bad.
Mm-mm.
Like, going by the nose, I wouldn't have liked it, but the flavor's actually pretty decent.
Well, I kind of like it. You know, a lot of times I get put off by a lot of Mexican beers. I'm not a fan of Corona. I'll drink a Tecate. I love a good Negro Modelo.
Negro Modelo is a good beer.
That's a wonderful beer. But this, at least, I'm enjoying. Like, I don't like Pacifica. It's just it doesn't,
made by Corona.
There you go. It doesn't do anything for me.
What about Corona Light, your favorite?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you don't like Corona, you're not going to have much more luck with Corona Light, I'm afraid.
That's not good.
But listen, this has got flavor to it, and I enjoy that. It's got... It puts something on the palate, I kind of dig it. Like if I were in Venezuela on vacation,
you would be.
It was hot.
This wants fish tacos.
Exactly.
Yeah. It really wants fish tacos.
Some arepas
really
with just, fish.
Yeah. I've never been to Venezuela, but I'd love to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is drinkable. I go with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's just interesting because I've been seeing it on the display. Not a big display, but it's on the display of beers downstairs at Phoenicia in my building, and I keep thinking, why have we never tried this beer? We need to try this beer. Yeah. So very interesting that it came on a week.
Yeah, if you
otherwise
like a very
we'd never have known the Venezuelan connection.
It's
there,
very so. German style as well. It's very like very crisp.
Bavarian, German.
Almost an apple kind of snap to the hops on the end of it.
Pretty refreshing, actually.
Another important thing, when I was reading about the Venezuelan version of it, it says that it's been open since 1941, and it has 1941 here in the bottle.
Okay, so there's some kind of connection, I think. Yeah. Maybe they're trying to convince us Americans it's an American beer and trying to convince the Venezuelans that it's a Venezuelan beer. So.
Well, it could be that it was maybe a Venezuelan company, and then they're having the brewery in Florida make it.
That's possible.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of people, a lot of brew houses have their brews. Like BJ's is a huge chain, but they don't brew their beers. They have, like, here in Texas and Houston, they have St. Arnold brewing all their beers.
Brewing all their beers for them. Know. And if you're, you know, we've talked about this before, about there are Budweiser breweries all over the world. And they all compete with each other to see who can make the most Budweiser-y Budweiser.
Yeah, so it could just be that Florida's contracting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, absolutely.
You know. It does say that Florida Brewing is a company. There is a Florida, so it's just its own. I maybe they have a Venezuela partner.
I think we should call them right now.
It's a shell company. Maybe. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about some more of the Petro Tierra spirits. We have another expression. Is that right, Roberto?
Yes, we have the Verde Maguey.
All right, I'm excited about trying that because the first one was wonderful. We'll be right back. It's Smoking and Toasting.
This one, I like it.
Welcome back, my friends. It's Smoking and Toasting. It's show number 376, and our program is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. We're heard on great radio stations all over the United States of America, and of course, we're available on all the major podcast platforms and on YouTube as well. Roberto Rivas-Filar is in the studio with us. He is our cocktail expert, one of several cocktail experts, actually, we have here on the program. But he's certainly much less annoying than
that Chris Morris guy.
Yeah, Chris Morris guy, yeah.
We love Chris, too.
So, we love all those guys.
And I worked for 2 years and a half with Wild.
Yeah. in other words, you've kept the same job for a while. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's Chris Morris is working on that. He'll get back to us. But anyway, we are glad to have you on the show. And I realize I don't know if we've ever had you plug your YouTube channel because you do such cool stuff on YouTube with spirits and cocktails and on Instagram. So where can people find that?
It's going to be Rob. My Instagram is going to be rob.thespiritbox. Rob? You can find me like that on Instagram and TikTok. And my YouTube channel is going to be on the links over there on the link tree. If somebody wants to go see the YouTube channel, which is a little bit but Instagram and TikTok is
Instagram and TikTok is where you're really driving.
That's what he's really curating.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Let me hold on. Look.
So nice.
That was awesome.
Roberto has introduced us to Petro Tierra, and we have Petro Tierra's co-founder, Enrique, on via Zoom with us. And Enrique, I see you are preparing to enjoy some spirits with us. And so this is when this works. So when you're on Zoom, you should have spirits on both ends so that you can all join and sample them appropriately. Now, did you guys start out wanting to make two expressions here, the one that we just tasted earlier and now this one?
Well, actually, the fun part is that when we started the project, they only, you know, like, there was not enough information to know what was the variety of the agave that was being used. We only knew that Don Jorge called it as Maguey de Castilla, and that was the first batch that we bottled. Right now, there's no more Maguey de Castilla available to produce. And this is because like 2-3 years ago, there was a huge fire on the hills of Nuevo León and Coahuila that ended up mostly of that those agaves. So yeah, it was like...
How many years will it take for them to grow to where they can be harvested again if they replant?
At least 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. At least 8-9 years. Right now the cenizo is the one that grows the most in Laguna de Sanchez, and Verde is up on the hill, so the production is pure, and then the ensemble, it's also like very, very difficult to get it.
Yeah. Now, we talked about last week on the show about, you know, during the sort of beginning of the tequila boom, there was a real shortage of agave because of so many new tequila companies, so many people beginning to drink tequila, especially in the more aged expressions and the nicer expressions. And now the sort of the pendulum is swung back the other way, and there's almost an excess of agave. Does any of that affect you? Because I know you're using only some very specialized, you know, specialized strains of agave.
Not really. I mean, all of the agaves used in Pecho Tierra are wild agaves, but this is the thing. Don Jorge and his family, they do not live off selling Pecho Tierra or selling the distillate, right? Mm-hmm. They are mainly producers of masa, tortillas, fruit, and other things. And this is only being produced for seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everything depends if they can get pulque, and if there is no pulque, there is no production.
Because you use that instead of the water in the distilling, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so and it's not their main income, so they only do it or they only produce it as they are getting the
pulque. And how hard is it to get pulque?
At the beginning, after the fires, it was like very hard because the pulque used to be collected right there in Laguna de Sanchez. But after the fire, they had to go up on the hill. Like it's like 2-3 hours to another local, another town called La Cebolla, which belongs to another municipio. I don't know how to say
another
that
county.
In English, Rob.
Would be county.
Yeah. Well, county to another county, and the access is very hard. You can get only there in a 4x4 car. So So they Don Jorge started like to build a trust relationship with the people over there, which are only like 8-9 families living there. So luckily for him, for us, and for everyone who has access to Laguna de Sanchez, this relationship has been growing, and now these people is like collecting more pulque more often. So for us it's like a very good news. But yeah, it's
very cool.
That's how it works right there.
Very cool. Well, I have to say on the nose, this is completely like nothing right. I've ever tried before.
Yeah,
I can't compare this.
It's
to
like
anything.
It's like you the first one, but amplified on the
absolutely yeah
on the funkiness. Cool. I love
the only thing I could compare it to is the first one.
Yeah, yeah, and the funk is way more present. This is in a beautiful way.
The funk of 40,000 years.
So if that first one, remember I mentioned that you get a chocolatey thing.
Mm-hmm.
This one is straight up brownie. This is
That's the first description that I like. And
oh yeah.
Whenever Will and I tasted it the first time, one of his descriptions was like, it's like I'm tasting a deconstructed brownie, like all the different elements.
Yeah. Wow. No, that really...
It's amazing how different the nose and the flavor are as well, but they really kind of do this neat thing together.
Well, that was true on the first one,
mm-hmm.
and it's true on this one as well, that the nose and then the actual taste on the palate when you sip it are completely different.
Yeah.
So this one also... gives me a really nice agave hug on the way down.
Look how beautifully oily that is on the glass.
I call it my official description for that is agave is the hug from the north.
The hug from the north.
I like it.
That's really cool. So I guess the big question is, when can we get this in Texas, you guys?
Well, Enrique is and Alan, they're working very hard to open new markets here in the United States. And I'm the first one who's very excited about that because I would love to, you know, show Texans and I mean everybody in the United States, of course. But I'm lucky that I have a lot of really good relationships with bars and restaurants and many people here. And I'm so excited to show everybody this product.
And, you know, listeners may not realize that they may not go, well, why don't you just introduce it? Well, first of all, you have to have the actual stock, the product. Yeah. You have to have enough to be able to sell. Secondly, every state has different liquor
has
laws.
Has their own laws, yeah.
And so what works in one state doesn't work in another. And then third, once you get past the laws, once you're in compliance with all the laws and you're okay to import, then you have to convince bars to stock it. You have to convince
a distributor.
Retail places. Usually a distributor's involved.
Distributing is harder than people might think it is because it's you need a very good logistics team that have the channels to make it. Or like before you can even put it in a store, you need that, how can I call it, channel of distribution, you know what I mean?
And the store wants to know, is this just going to sit on my shelves? Are you doing anything to promote it? How are you going to get people aware of it? Because, you know, I shop at the Specs in Midtown.
Yeah.
There's so many bottles on that on those shelves.
And
like, but you know, God,
one of those helpful things, though, is my wife loves to go to Specs on Friday or Saturday night because mm-hmm. you walk in there and they have just tables set up for samples everywhere.
Specs, but those Specs on Friday or Saturday night, H-E-B on a Saturday afternoon. You can
it's eat, called pregame.
Yeah, you can eat for a day. You're totally good with the samples.
And those samples make a big difference because there's been things that I've tried on the samples and bought immediately because, okay, that's really good.
And that's why they do them.
Because, and there's also things that I might have considered buying that I was like, oh, no, after I taste.
That's when the sampling program backfires. I don't expect it would happen with this.
And not even with Specs, it's sometimes very hard with because I do a lot of straight direct business with them and buyers and stuff, and they're not very easy. They'll tell you, I need, before I even decide to put this, bring it into Specs, I need you to bring me 10 accounts that you know they're gonna buy it. And then after that, they make it even harder too. Like, it's not easy.
It's so if it seems like it's easy, if you go, well, why don't you just like bring it to our town,
just put it on the shelf in the store, it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure trying to convince bars and restaurants to carry it is not an easy thing as well.
I feel like a product like this needs a visionary bartender, someone who wants to do something different. Because this doesn't make your standard mule. It doesn't make your standard
So Roberto, that brings a great question up. What kind of cocktails would this be good for?
Well, this, the way I see it, just think about how versatile this spirit can be. It's funky, it's sweet, it's peppery, it's high proof. You can go an old fashioned style route. You can go, I made an espresso martini style with chocolate thing with this one, which was delightful.
Because it already has that chocolate undertone.
Yeah, right? And think with the funk of this, you can even make a Pecho Tierra daiquiri style thing with just lime, sugar, and spirit. It's funky, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can do plenty of riffs on tiki drinks because of the funk. There's many things you can do with it.
Right, the funk puts it in the same sort of realm as like rum drinks because of the funk. Yeah,
I think tiki bars would like lay low and stuff like that. They would love this. Bad News Bar, they would love it.
Oh, yeah. And give them a way to offer something, you know, a little bit different on their menu too, because this is going to give you, I love rum. I drink a lot of rum, I never had one I described as smoky, and this has just got that different, that sort of Mexican spirit.
Yeah,
a little bit of smokiness.
Enrique, have you done any mixed drinks with your product?
I personally, I haven't. Well, like the bars where we are now, they have done some mixed. Actually, there was like a restaurant in New York that came down to Monterey last year. It was called Tacos Way, I think. Yeah, Tacos Way. And they did a takeover with another bar at Monterey, and they did a very, very good mixology that they were preparing back in.
They had a whole menu prepared for it. Yeah. How cool is that?
So, Enrique, if I'm in Monterey or Mexico City, what's the cool place to go that I wouldn't know? What's a cool bar to go to that I wouldn't know about as a tourist?
Well, if you are in Monterey right now, the hottest one, if I can call it like that, it's called Bar 1900, which is inside in one of the oldest hotels in Monterey. It's in the Hotel Ancira Rock.
Oh, yeah.
It's run by another bar called Bar Maverick, which they also have like very good drinks. And I for sure would recommend you to go there. They have actually a drink called Mary, if I don't recall it. Prepared with Pecho Tierra Cenizo.
Nice.
You are in Mexico City, you can go to Matuche, which is also a new mezcaleria here. They are also like doing some mixology with Pecho Tierra.
I've been wanting to go to Mexico City to see Benjamin over there at I'm blanking on the name. Why am I blanking? Benjamin from the ones that have the Margarita El Pastore over there.
It's okay. It happens to us.
Lehman Tour. Sorry.
Yeah. Don't feel bad.
I have to go there to offer. Pechettiara.
Well,
I will do it,
this so. Is absolutely exceptional. Is this in the same price range as the first expression?
Yeah, it's pretty much. It varies a little bit depending on, like he said, depending on, you know, the market price. But
well, we are totally rooting for you guys to get this into more of the United States.
Yeah, I would spend money on either bottle. Absolutely. In a moment. These are both fantastic. I might like this one. This much better.
Yeah, I'm probably with you. I think
I'm gonna
like
have
it
to
better,
try them back and forth here in a minute.
Yeah, well, I think, and we can do that.
And I think we should be back with this whenever they give me. They're gonna send me an ensemble, which mm-hmm. is a marriage of both of them. They're gonna send me. Oh, there he has it over there. Look.
I'm liking the ensemble.
It.
Yep. Yes.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about that. Plus, we'll be tasting our pale ale, a hazy pale ale from Pondaceta Brewing Company, the Pale Aura. When we come back, and Drinking News is on the way shortly. This is Smoking and Toasting.
That sounded sexy.
Yes, it did. Welcome back. It's Smoking and Toasting. Our show is all about craft beer, fine spirits, and hand-rolled cigars. Now, earlier in the show, Roberto had mentioned to me that this the second expression of Pechettiara that we tried was really good with chocolate. So I went out in the kitchen here and got a little Milky Way and had a nibble of this and then went back to this one. Holy moly.
Yeah.
It, like, changes everything. It's amazing. Ian was pointing out during the break that you get a lot more of the minerality,
yeah.
but it also brings out that chocolate undertone mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and just complements it beautifully. Boy, you talk about things that were made to go together. That's almost like
something for dessert right there, yeah. like a chocolate mousse and a bit of this.
Ian,
would be.
I'm just curious. Your pour looks dramatically different than mine.
Sorry.
Oh, I'm just saying. See, you've gotten really good at that, Roberto. I would chew on this this Milky Way a little bit more, but I think it's actually time to do some beer tasting.
It's gonna probably the chocolate might go gross with this.
I don't know. You never know. We've had stranger things have happened.
That's true. That's
I love
true.
The nose already. Myself.
This is from a brewery in Amarillo,
this has
Texas.
Got a little bit of wow. dank and a little bit of citrus to it.
I was going
to
say I was not familiar with this brewery before today. They are the Pondaceta Brewing Company out of Amarillo, Texas, which Amarillo is almost not even Texas. It's just way up there.
Yeah.
But it is a pale ale, a hazy pale ale called Pale Aura. And I don't know
brewed with Citra, HBC 586, Idaho 7, and Galaxy hops.
I can smell the Citra and the Galaxy.
Yeah, oh. The Citra is like hitting me right
but
away.
There's just a little bit of dank on the tail end of it that's intriguing, too.
Yeah, very interesting on the nose. So let's see how this goes.
It's actually
I like it a lot.
Wow, it's pretty good.
It's mm-hmm. really good.
And I would like
even
to
even cutting through the chocolate.
I would like to accentuate too, because Enrique is here with us. There's a big movement of craft beer in Mexico going on too these days. Mm-hmm. And there's some many really great breweries and coming out of there.
I'm excited because when I love to vacation in Mexico. And have been going for years, but haven't been in the last several. And so the last times I was there looking for some craft breweries, I wasn't finding much. But I've been reading more and more about the sort of craft beer explosion coming to
Cruz,
Mexico.
Take a sip of your IPA there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you want to combine
them? And
then
take a sip of your Pechettiara.
Okay.
And if you thought it was a brownie chocolate bomb before.
Wow.
I mean,
that's like Mama's kitchen brownies. There's what that is. It's like Mama's house. You know? Wow, that's not any of those like Duncan Hines box brownies. That's the real ones that your mama made.
Yeah. Damn, that's interesting.
I would never have thought that an IPA and an agave spirit like this would be.
I was actually a little worried about it, you know, because we don't
see,
always.
No, it works in both directions too. Now it brings out a little of the it brings out a little bit of like lemon peel.
So see, that's a new thing that can be. So you know, I don't know because in Mexico it's not that common, but in the United States we have something called the boiler makers, where you get a beer and you're shot. Typically,
right.
This would be a great boiler maker.
Right. Except I don't want to shoot this. It's way too interesting. Yeah, I want to sip this.
Of course.
That, yeah.
Because the idea behind the Boilermaker is
we also
to be
have
that
the idea of
you
having,
shoot it and then you drink the beer.
Having yeah. a liquor.
Or you drop it in.
Or a spirit with a beer back. And this really, really goes pretty
honestly,
well together.
I'm used to that more with the rums and with the whiskeys, you know, with it pairing up with the beers that way.
Right. Because, like, with an IPA, most bourbons don't work, but a rye
will work wonderfully.
A rye
yes.
works really, mm-hmm. really well. So it's interesting to see, like, and I don't know why these work. I would never have guessed it. I was actually thinking that they were going to kind of combat each other on my palate, but they're actually really nice together.
I feel like it mm-hmm. brings, you know, whenever you're eating a brownie and then you get all of a sudden these salty notes.
Yeah, yeah.
It brings the minerality that you were talking about.
Yeah.
It's like those, you get sweet and then you get a little bit of the salty kind of like bitter notes of the cooking process.
And can I also say
the
this?
Crust.
The longer I sip this, the better it gets.
Yeah.
And it's not just because I'm getting tipsy.
This bottle would be very dangerous.
The flavors open up more and more.
This bottle would be very dangerous at my house. And the reason is because I would pour a glass mm-hmm. and I would turn around and be like, oh, it evaporated. Yeah. I'm going to have to pour more.
You've got some of those glasses like I have that apparently there's a hole in them
you just,
somewhere.
Yeah, you just pour liquid in and it just evaporates.
Yeah, what happened here? No, this is...
It's so good.
And it is for a spirit that is has as much going on the palate as it does. It's remarkably easy to drink.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't, you know, sometimes you get stuff that's got a lot going on. Like you get a really high proof rum or something like that. It's like it's good, but you have to drink it really slow. Yeah. Like it just doesn't limit
much hug.
Having not had anything from Bondicetta Brewing,
mm-hmm.
this is a pretty nice.
You guys seem like they got something going on, don't
pretty
they?
Pretty nice IPA coming out for.
Yeah,
they're coming out swinging, right?
Yeah, maybe over there, Enrique, you can find a good citrusy hazy IPA and see how it works with the Mexican beer over there.
Yeah, I'm thinking right now in one called Finissima, which is actually from Monterrey, and it tastes like it has this taste like an orange, and it tastes mm-hmm. very good. So I would try it.
So I'll tell you what, Enrique, if you would do this, we would be so happy. We would over reciprocate if you would put a few Mexican craft beers in a box and send them to Roberto. We'll send you a big box of Texas craft beer, things you might not be able to get down there. We would love to do that because we'd love to try them on the show, you know?
Yeah.
I'll do it. Okay. There's a lot of good breweries in Monterey, so I'll do it. I'll make it work.
And, you know, because of the beer distribution rules, it can sometimes be hard for us to get beers from out. You know, I usually try to limit, we do three beers on every show just about, and I usually try to limit the Texas beers to only one.
Right.
So we're touching other areas because we have viewers all over. And so it's always good to find things.
This
and whenever I travel, I try to bring
beers back. This is something
I
celebrate, though, because I remember back in the day when I first started really exploring craft beer as craft beer started to explode. Mm-hmm. I remember going to places and going, hey, is there any local beers? And people would look at me like I'm crazy, like local beer.
Local beers.
I think we're over on this segment, Terry.
I think we are on this one.
I don't know what we're going to do about that. Maybe we can fix it in editing. Adam can stop it partway and join it back
in. It's just too much fun.
Yeah, we were having too much fun. All right, we have to take a break. We're way over time. We'll be back at Smoking and Toasting. Stand by. Drinking News is next.
Hell yeah.
Welcome back. It's the show where we forget to watch the clock. It's Drinking News. We're glad you're... I know it's Smoking and Toasting, actually. It's the Drinking News segment of the show. So let's get
we're
just enjoying the wonderful spirit, the Petrucciana. Drinking News is the segment of the program where we bring you a story from the news. It's something that really happened. It's not from a parody site. Something that really happened and was reported in the media. And it's a story that sometimes, not always, involves drinking, but is always best enjoyed if you've been drinking. And as if to illustrate that, you guys were both taking good long sips while I while I said that there. So we have, of course, our theme song, and it's something people actually look forward to because I don't know why because, but they do. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Drinking News.
Drinking News, Drinking News. Now it's time for Drinking News, Drinking News, Drinking News. Now it's time for Drinking News. A Florida man with one arm said he had a gator for a pet. When asked about his absent arm, he said,
to say to the fans.
Oh, see, that broke up. Can you say it again? It kind of broke up when you were saying it.
I have to take the gator to the vet.
There we go.
Drinking news. Drinking news. Now it's time for drinking news.
Cheers, all. Well, our drinking news story today touches on the increasingly popular trend of cosplay.
Cosplay. Cosplay. Interesting.
Cosplay, for anyone who doesn't know, is the act of dressing up in costume, usually as your favorite fictional character. Now, for most people that participate in this, it involves dressing up like a superhero, like Iron Man or Batman or Spider-Man. But if you're going to do cosplay, you can't just do it half-assed. I remember when I lived in Los Angeles, there was this guy on Hollywood Boulevard that would always cosplay as Spider-Man and try to get people to give him money. I never did, because he was the lamest Spider-Man ever. He wouldn't even really commit to the character. He just wore a Spider-Man top half of the costume and a pair of shorts. Nope.
Shorts?
Sorry, shorts. Sir. I'm gonna give my dollar to the dude over there playing the banjo and wearing a tinfoil hat with little antennas sticking up out of it. I don't know what superhero he's supposed to be, but at least he's offering some entertainment. But at comic conventions all over the world, people have really begun to get into the cosplay thing. And some people take it even further. They like to wear these outfits and fantasy role play in the bedroom.
Oh.
Now, I get that it might be kind of sexy to get freaky with Wonder Woman or the Black Widow. But I have to say, I just don't get the furry thing.
The furry thing?
I mean, if the only way you can get turned on is to have your partner dress in a Chuck E. Cheese mascot outfit and dance the Macarena on the coffee table, hey, look, you do you, okay? You do your thing. But I'm sorry, we can't be friends. Now, I will admit to being a pretty serious geek, but even I have my limits. I've been to a couple of comic book conventions, and I thought they were pretty cool. But the way I describe my nerd parameters is that, yes, I will go to the Star Trek convention.
I just want you to know I've never been to a comic book convention.
I get it. But everybody has their nerd parameters, right, if you're a geek. And mine are that, yes, I will go to the Star Trek convention, but no, I will not wear the pointed ears. That's just me. That's where I...
You don't want to be Legolas?
You're not speaking all day in Klingon?
That's right. But for today's drinking news story, we travel across the pond to bonnie Scotland.
Scotland.
Where a Scottish man caused quite a stir on his way to a comic convention. Our Scottish man... Do you have a little Scottish man?
I don't know. I was trying to come up with something.
Yeah, a little bit of a jig, maybe. I don't know. Our Scottish man was on the train to Dundee, which just sounds lovely and quaint, doesn't it? The train to Dundee. Seems like Julie Andrews should pop up and sing a song about a lonely goat herd at any point. But anyway, the man was on his way to a convention called D-Con, which is where things got a little dicey. Now, don't feel bad if you've never heard of D-Con, which is at the University of Dundee in Scotland. I had neither. I have heard of Double D-Con in Las Vegas, but I'm pretty sure that's a very different kind of convention. In any case, the man's train was forced to stop just shortly after leaving the station, and when it came to a complete halt, he was approached by a very serious-looking security guard. The serious guard asked our Scottish man to get off the train for a little chat. Which he did. Oh, and one thing I left out. The Scottish convention goer was riding the train, dressed in full regalia, as a Star Wars stormtrooper. Apparently, someone on the train had alerted the police because they were concerned about his plastic Star Wars blaster that he was carrying
they
in his holster.
Obviously don't watch Star Wars because those guys can't hit anything.
So the guard and the man, who calls himself, by the way, because it gets even less reliable, Grampian Stormtrooper. That's what he calls himself. Grampian Stormtrooper.
What?
The guard and Grampian Stormtrooper got back on the train, which then went back to the station for good old Gramps to be questioned by authorities. Now, according to Grampian Stormtrooper's post on Facebook, he was met by two firearms officers, three Police Scotland officers, and two British transit police.
That's a big deal, by the way. Yeah. The firearm officers over there, because they're regular cops over there, don't just have guns. So they had to call special cops that have guns in
and
for that.
And all of these guys questioned him at length. All of them. One can only wonder if they were asking him for the exact spot of vulnerability on the Death Star. Ultimately, Grampian Stormtrooper, who I'll just call GS from now on, just for short, GS was told to return home and get a bag to put his plastic blaster in, and he was asked not to wear Stormtrooper armor on the train.
Well.
All of this surprised our friend GS, who says he's been wearing the costume on trains and buses for 10 years with no issues. He also says that he often wears the Stormtrooper outfit with a sense of Scottish style. And that means, you guessed it.
No. There's a kilt
Stormtrooper on top and kilt on the bottom.
That's what I thought it was going to be.
Which, of course, leads to the unavoidable question, is that a Series 37B Mandalorian blaster beneath your kilt, or are you just happy to see me? But seriously, I do feel bad for good old GS. I mean, he was just doing his thing.
Yeah.
He was letting his geek flag fly, and then some Scottish busybody Karen type who can't tell a plastic replica of a fictional blaster weapon from an AK-47 had to step in and take all the fun out of things.
Yeah.
Like,
I want to know that lady probably didn't even know what a stormtrooper was.
A play gun.
Yeah.
You can't tell a play gun.
A stormtrooper. Wait a second.
Made
just
out of plastic. Wait, with a stormtrooper gun.
But it's a stormtrooper. I mean, like, we don't all know what
a
stormtrooper
is.
Anyone
in the world who's not maybe in a third world country somewhere has never actually seen at least an image of the stormtroopers from Star Wars. I mean, this is some of the most popular movies of all time.
I'm
all
83,
over the world.
And I haven't been to the movies since 1962.
Listen,
what they should have done is they should have talked to the person that let the train people know to cause all this panic and be like, stop being a little, can't say that on this program.
Busybody.
Busybody. Stop being
You can say biatch.
Also, do you know where your business is? You should stick to it. You know.
Look, if it's just me, I'd love to be riding a train and see some dude in a stormtrooper with a kilt getup headed to a convention where he can show off his cosplay style, just riding along. I'd love that. I mean, I'd even try using a Jedi mind trick on him just to see if I could make him say, these are not the droids you're looking for. But as you're probably already dreading, this story has struck me with a certain dash of inspiration. And when I'm inspired, I do what all comic book nerds like to do. I write a verse of poetry. And now that I've done so, bound as I am by the Kittimer Accords of SETI Alpha 5 and the Mandalorian Code of Honor, I am required to share this prose with you. This is the way. Can we have a little interstellar poetry music, please? On a train, dressed up like a stormtrooper, on his way to Decon, feeling super, Gramps was questioned, detained, but the kilt, he explained, is so much easier when using the pooper. Reporting live from Decon. Reporting live from Decon in Dundee, where I'm pretty sure I just saw Alan Denny in a Chuck E. Cheese costume. My name is Cruz, and that is your...
drinking news, that's our time for drinking news.
Cheers, y'all.
Woo!
Yes. True story, by the way. We don't make these up, you know? We just report them. We don't. We report, you decide. I think maybe that's already in use.
What kind of place are you in where you can't carry an obviously fake plastic gun?
That's funny. That doesn't look like any type of firearm that actually exists in the real world.
Yeah, oh, it's yeah. No, alien, they look. They totally look different.
Alien blaster, for God's sake. Yeah. Oh, well.
Maybe it didn't have the little orange tip on the end of it.
Yeah.
It's got to have the orange tip so that you know that it's not real.
It's got to have that orange reservoir tip or it doesn't actually.
Did you say reservoir
tip? I did. I always wanted to, like, make a parody of Reservoir Dogs and call it Reservoir Tips.
I have to be selective when I buy a beanie cap.
Yeah.
Because if I buy one that's a little too long, then it bunches up a little bit and I get the Reservoir Tip on top. It's not a good look in the winter.
It's not really a good look. You're absolutely right. Oh, we have to do a beer in this segment, don't we?
Yeah. Do you have any beer with you, Enrique?
I got so excited about drinking news that I forgot.
I just came back yesterday from my fridge is empty. All right.
Well, listen, if you'll send us some Mexican craft beers, we'll send you a big enough box of American craft beers to stock your fridge for a while, I promise.
Will do. All right, I'm fair working enough. Up that right now.
Fair enough. Ian is opening up a small... This isn't
Revolution
even a large
Brewing.
Can. This is a 12-ounce can. Revolution Brewing. It is their barley wine ale called Maple Jacket.
Maybe. So I refill you guys so we can do the same.
Well, I have a feeling this may go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have a feeling too.
No, don't refill me. Whatever you do, I don't want any more of that delicious spirit.
And then you...
Yeah, exactly. No, that'd be great. We'd love to pair these.
So we try with this one now?
Yeah, sure. I like them both, so...
I love the way that bottle sounds. Crunchy sounds.
Yeah. I have a feeling
while you're doing that, I just want to point out that there is something that I think is going on right now in that table. And you know, on the back on those bottles, there is a phrase that says "Esta bebida alegra el espíritu," which means this bottle, this beverage makes your spirit happier. And this phrase I found it out in a book from Lampazo de Naranjo, which is a town in Nuevo León, that say in 1789, after a prohibition of producing mezcal in that village, people are still producing, selling, and drinking this vino mezcal in front of the authorities because they say that this beverage makes their soul happier. So
yeah,
I think that's a very important part.
I'm going to go totally along with that because it's making my soul happier right now.
And this is a perfect example because I've been hearing your show many times, and I feel like this is one of those moments that we just like started having so much fun.
Well, and you know, this is what it's all about. When we first started doing the show, I was like, the whole thing about cigars, about craft beer, about distilled spirits is the community, the sharing, the having a good time with each other. It's not necessarily, I mean, it's fine to sit at home and sample something, but it's so much more fun to do it together and talk about it. And so let's talk about this barley wine ale. Ian's a barley wine fan, but he's picky.
Oh.
It brings a tear to my eye.
Not only about the barley wine, he's picky.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Wow.
Mapley.
It is aged, so mapley. It's
aged
like,
in bourbon barrels with maple syrup. This is a proper barley wine, my friends.
Man,
this tastes like dates and...
This is gorgeous.
Revolution Brewing is a very reputable brewer. But we've had barley wines, American-style barley wines, from some very reputable brewers, and you haven't really cared for them as much because
this
they were
thing is
more
so
carbonated
sticky, you
and
could
more
build
hoppy.
A boat with it.
Dude.
It's amazing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I just had it with the spirit, and it takes it a whole different direction.
Yes, it does.
It's coming in at 14.4%. So it's coming in hot, ladies and gentlemen. This dry English barley wine is rested for 1 year in freshly emptied maple syrup bourbon barrels before being sweetened with
maple
that
syrup
same
bourbon barrels.
That's very specific.
With that same syrup just prior to packaging, subtle maple or aromatics and flavor complement the classic vanilla and toffee notes we've come to expect. Without detriment to the balance. Enjoy now or serve cold.
This is
outrageously
good. A barley wine as some that we've had that have been in the big bombers that have been $50 or $60. I mean, this is, and I don't remember how much this was, but I know it wasn't $50 or $60.
This is beautiful.
And this is one I got from out of state. But Revolution Brewing. I mean,
Brewing
these guys,
Chicago.
They're in Chicago, Illinois. And we've
had
their beers
before. Did you try the Fechotiero with it?
Yes. Yes.
Like, that's insane. Just crazy.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane.
And I don't know. I think I'm picking up, like, a cinnamon note from the Pecho Tierra. I'm not sure which direction it's coming from, but it is so good.
I was going to say it made the Petro Tieta remind me a little bit of a really good gin.
Oh, interesting. You
know, just that minerality and the little bit of floral nature that it brings. All right, we're going to talk about this some more. We got to take a break. We'll be back to wrap things up and say a special thank you to Enrique Alfredo Cesar Gomez, the co-founder of Petro Tieta. We'll be right back. Oh, I just spilled barley wine on myself. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's Smoking and Toasting. We are here in the studio this week on show number 376. Puts us about halfway to 500, and we're glad that you are.
That math checks out.
Yeah, we're glad that you were here. All right, so I want you to know there's a genius of planning thing that goes on sometimes here in the show, because I generally pick out the beers. And if we have a spirits guest like we do today with Enrique and Roberto, obviously they're picking out the spirits that they're bringing in. So in a case like this, I have no idea what's going to go with what. I mean, I had not tasted any of these spirits before. And now we find ourselves in a situation where all of the beers have at least to some degree gone with this.
Insane.
But this barley wine that we tasted in the last segment.
It's amazing, because the Petro Tieta doesn't back off no matter how big the beer is.
Right.
And it not only that, but it works with it, like those warm, round, chocolatey flavors, mapley flavors. They just kind of really work together. This is like one of the most versatile spirits we may have had on the show.
Agreed. Yeah. And I don't want to get too sappy, but something Roberto was saying in the last segment really resonates with me. This trying of things and sharing of what you're trying, and it's one of the reasons that we enjoy doing this show, is because we get to do this with each other each week. And we encourage people to do this with their friends and their families. And the whole show started when Ian, who's been a friend of my wife's for years, and his wife came over, and we started, you know, drinking beers out of my refrigerator and going, oh, try this, try this. Oh, what do you think of this? And the way we were talking about, we were just having such a good time.
Yeah.
I thought, that's a show. And that's actually where Smoking and Toasting came from. We were also smoking cigars, by the way.
Yes.
Which
is funny, because cigars is how I became friends with this guy, too.
Right. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, and so to me, and we've always talked about this in terms of the cigar community, but it's absolutely true with the spirits community, the cocktail community, and the craft beer community as well, is that these kind of relationships and connections, they're just huge. I mean, there's people, there's stories, that we've talked about this on the show before, people who've met people in a cigar bar that have furthered their careers and vice versa. And, you know, these things happen all the time. And to me, it's that community is which what makes all of this special. And nothing sounds more special to me than having a bottle of this, being able to have some friends over and share it and talk about it and open up some beers and talk about how it contrasts and compares with all of these things.
And, you know, something that I think is very important to mention about this, and you see the passion, like we have passion here, and the passion that was put in this, because I think we forgot to mention this, when Don Jorge, he cooks all the piñas and everything, you know how he gets them, like, ready to ferment for fermentation?
Yeah.
With a wooden mast, he crushes everything by hand.
Wow.
That's so cool. It's dedication.
It's a labor
right
of love. Yeah, it's a labor of love. I love that. So, Enrique, when are we all getting together in, you know, Mexico City or someplace to party together with a little of this? I think that'd be a blast.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, you just like down in Mexico City or even in Hawaii, we can make it work.
Well, we've talked about wanting to definitely expand. You know, we love where we're from, but we definitely want to expand the footprint of the show more and more by doing more and more things out. And so any excuse that we can find to go somewhere and drink and just turn the microphones on sounds like a plan to me. I absolutely love it. So I want to thank you for coming on the show. Real quick, What's the sense that you guys have that this could be available in more than New York anytime soon? Is it something we can be on the watch for? Is it going to take more time? What do you think?
What do you think, Enrique?
Well, for us, we are working to have it available in more states this year over there in probably in Texas, California.
Yeah.
Washington or so on, but we are working on that. big part of the project is that we don't want to push to Don Jorge to produce more. That's right. What the tradition so you gotta, dictates,
yeah.
right?
You got
to
so grow in keep it. Yeah, in ordinance with
it
what you
It has
have.
To come from the soul.
Yeah, I love that. Yep. See, I think that's what makes it so much better because it to me, to be able to mass produce something and keep that soul, keep that yeah. spirit is really a difficult thing.
Yeah.
And that's why artisanal and custom producers and micro distilleries and microbreweries
yeah.
sometimes are the guys where you see the most heart.
It just tastes better every time, right?
It really does. And this tastes wonderful. Enrique, thank you so much for sharing this with us. And I know that Roberto is your contact, but just know we're not all like him. So
what is that supposed to be?
So thank you so much for sharing this spirit with us. Good luck to you with getting it wider distribution so more people who listen to the show can try it. And thank you again for spending time with us today on Smoking and Toasting. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, y'all.
Thank you, guys.
Salud, guys.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you,
thank
guys.
Thank you, Enrique. Have a good day. Whatever happened, don't leave it so soon. It's all right when it's okay.